Welcome to Israel. Why is the Middle East important? We Christians are the Notzrim, according to most Jews today. We are the watchers on the wall. Our purpose as members of the Commonwealth of Israel is to serve and protect God's people. After the formation of the world, God enacted a plan, and that plan began in the Middle East at the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. And that plan concludes in that same place. The context of the entirety of God's plan begins and completes in and with Israel. There is no denying that, nor refuting it, if you are a Jew or a Christian, and the anthropological evidence verifies it. For the purposes of this podcast, Israel is both a nation and a people. Welcome back, folks. This is Israel. Why is the Middle East important? Neil and I are here together. We've been talking about Purim. We're going to take it further, just as we did in the last two. We're going to take it further and really bring out what's necessary to hear. Neil, what's in my mind right now is in 1948, in the present day, Israel was formed. They had lost 6 million, right? 6 million Jews. Just 3 years earlier, 6 million Jews. And as soon as that new state was formed, as soon as it was formed, the next day, they were attacked.
Right.
No compassion.
Right.
No consideration.
Right.
No, like, these people should be left alone for a while to form a nation because they've been through World War II. They've been through hell, right? Literally, through hell. And now, and there were people right away. And there were Christians, I'm sad to say, even some Christian or quote-unquote believers, right, Christian believers, that didn't want the state to happen.
Right.
Didn't even want it to happen. And were against it. And,
yeah.
And debated against it.
Right. Right.
And so, but it's like they can't get away from it.
No. No. It and that's what I think believers today need to realize, it's helpful to realize, is that it is not about Israel or Jews per se. It is, will God bring to pass
what he said bring to pass, right? The eternal promises of God can be counted on,
right?
And we're just pointing it out,
right? And it's important also, I think, to note that nowhere can you find in the Bible anywhere where it says, this geographic dot is promised to Israel. It's the consortium. It is the all of it together where God promises Abraham, to you and your offspring will I give this land. It is. There's nowhere where it says, and this is the promised land. There's nowhere where you can find that. But we take those promises of God and we put them together, and we say, wow, that is the promised land. Those are the chosen people. Nowhere does it call them the chosen people. You can't find that anywhere.
Not that exact phrase.
That's what I'm trying
to
say.
But these are my people, he says.
Right, but you take all that,
yes,
what you said in the first show about all the different writings,
right,
it was seared into the consciousness of these promises.
Right.
And
yeah.
Well, who else would you promise anything to but somebody who you chose to give it to? Who else, what other land would it be but a promise of a land? And it's also important to know that in many places it says, this will be your land forever, but nowhere does it say you will possess or you will own or you will
occupy.
You might even occupy the land,
okay,
but you don't own the land.
Okay.
It was always under foreign rulers.
Well, that's true.
And so the amount of time that Israel has actually been the sovereign of the land is very short, very small period of time, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what's happening in our day, is that Israel's gaining some of the promised land back, the land of promise, going up north soon, going to the Philistines, and they will own it, as it were. They will possess it.
It should be rightly said, though, as we talked about in the previous episode, that a part of this is Israel's own making by not following the commandments. They were exiled because of it.
they were very much exiled because they didn't follow certain rules in the first temple. Mm-hmm. And that's what we land in. And I've said to you before, this was a common thing. Mm-hmm. Like we can read about Pharisees being very, very diligent to follow the law. Well, it's because, again, it was so seared into their consciousness that they didn't want to be accused as, well, you're part of the reason why we would go into exile again. You're not being diligent enough. You're not following the law. We don't want this to happen again. This is the milieu. This is the environment that Jesus, Yeshua, came into that we read about in the New Testament. They were still, in his day, living the idea of only 500 years previous, our temple where God's presence dwelt was destroyed by heathen Gentile nations.
Exactly. It's an amazing thing to me that all this occurred and continues to occur. But in Genesis, and we did shows on this, Abraham was walking with God. God said, go to the place I will show you, okay? God says to Abraham in Genesis 13, for all the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. Offspring meaning offsprings, which means descendants. It's not just Isaac, right? It's not offspring singular. It's offspring plural. And he only had one son and one, I mean, he had two sons, but only one Isaac.
Well, he makes it very clear, that is, God makes it very clear, to which lineage, because Abraham, we know, had sons, and so some people would say, well, that's us too then. No, he said in 26 to Isaac, and then he repeated the promise to Jacob in 28, in Genesis 28.
Yes.
In other words, it was that lineage he promised this place, as you said, which is the promised land to that group of people.
And then Moses repeats it when Joshua was going in.
Right, and Moses repeats the whole promise of blessing and cursing. He says, when this happens to you, when you fail, basically. Yes. So it's not if, it's when.
When.
But God makes it clear throughout the writings, as we said, there's more than one place where they reference this. God says, it's not because you are so special. You were the smallest of all the tribes. You were the weakest of all the tribes. Yeah. It's because I promised it to Abraham originally and repeated it to Isaac and repeated it again to Jacob and repeated it to the 12 tribes and so on. But it's for my namesake that I will do this.
For my namesake, because I said so.
Because I said so.
Because I'm God, and you're not.
And you can count on what he says, and that's what, some people say, well, that was until Christianity came, and God started all over, and blah, blah, blah. Well, the fact is, if God is schizophrenic, or if he could go back on his promise, if you will, then, as many people have pointed out, well, how secure is your faith?
Yeah.
It's very insecure if God could be.
Right.
Because I know what I'm capable of.
If he's schizophrenic with the Jews, he'll be schizophrenic with me.
And if he's untrustworthy with the Jews or duplicitous with the Jews, he'll be duplicitous with me.
Or potentially
so.
It's possible.
And I, sir, couldn't count on the promises.
How can you count on anything?
Right.
Right. Okay, that's powerful. Thank you, Neil. So that's an essential thing, and it's so here in Esther, we have Esther there and Mordecai, going back to that story. So Mordecai I'm impressed with his how instrumental he is in this story, I want to say crafty, but I don't mean it that way in a slot. You know, he's just really smart.
He's very smart. And again, it's almost like he's a composite of many different characters, because how could one person say the things he says? One place that's very famous is Esther 4:13 through 14. And I'd like to read that, Jeff, and I'll read it quickly. But says, this is Mordecai talking to Esther. Mm-hmm. And he says, do not imagine that because you are in the king's palace, you alone will escape the fate of all the Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. And who knows if perhaps you have come into the kingdom for such a time as this. You know, these are very well-known scripture verses where Mordecai said that to Esther. And what we need to do is say, okay, how do I apply that in our day? And one, if you are a believer, you are most assuredly, you've been promised, you are in the king's house. Mm. Jesus himself said, I go to prepare a place for you, right?
Whoa.
I mean, there's many allusions to this.
What?
Right,
what?
There's many allusions to you're in the king's palace, but do not think if you don't do your duty that you will escape the affairs.
That's right.
For the deliverance of the Jews. Why? You could insert there, for deliverance for God's sake, for God's name, will arise. Not might, I'll look for somebody, we'll see if they do. It says, will arise from another place.
Yes.
You and your father's house will perish. I don't want to perish. But it also says at the last, who knows if you have come into the kingdom for such a time as this. And it is no happenstance, Jeff, that we, all of our listeners, I, you, all of us, are born at this point in time and are alive and are contemplating and trying to apply these principles. It is not happenstance. You're here for such a time as this. And Israel is in great need, great peril, great lies about Israel. They're being tormented by their captors. And God says, it will arise whether you do your duty or not. And that's very sobering as
well,
a believer.
And what the way Mordecai said it, and I was listening carefully to you there, he said if you think that it's just for you, just realize that God can do this without you.
Right. Right.
And he will do it no matter what.
Right.
It's not about you.
And it took great, more than even the story conveys, great courage for Esther to stand up and say, I will do it.
Right.
Certainly she loved Mordecai, her uncle. Certainly there was a great bond.
Yes.
But the idea is, for us, for our application, as we've read, nothing new under the sun in the Talmudic writings that we mentioned earlier, that it's all for our application. This idea of, I will do what God says, irregardless of what it costs me. And it will cost all of us something. But whether you get on board or not, it will happen.
Right.
And I don't want to get in the king's palace someday and look at him and say, yeah, I know you told me to do that, but I didn't.
Wow. Okay. So it's all about when Israel is restored, and this goes to God's faithfulness. It's all about when things happen, not if.
Right, that's right? Correct.
And that's very powerful in terms of how we view what we read, all the way through the prophecies, all the way through what it says when. It talks about it will. It never says it might, or it's a, you know. And the thing that amazes me is that God told them when he gave them the law, when he gave them a king, he said, when you have a good king, things will go well. If he follows the law and does things the way I say, it'll be great. If he doesn't, it won't go well, right? And so that pattern exists all the way through the Kings and the Chronicles, and so you can just see it, right?
That's exactly right, and that's what we had said earlier about Moses in Deuteronomy 30, where he says, and it shall be when these things come on you.
Yes.
Not if.
Yeah,
they're going to come.
Right.
Why?
Yeah.
Because no human beings, none of us,
right,
can do everything perfect.
No.
But Israel is the blinking light, and they're held to a high standard.
Yep.
But God said, and when it comes upon you, and when you do this thing, and when you and your children return, then the Lord will gather you from all the nations where you were scattered. So in other words, God again is saying, I know what's going to happen. Here's blessing, here's cursing. But when this happens to you, I will regather you. And again, it goes back to, because it's for my name's sake. And there's many other verses as well that that God talks about where he makes it clear that he will restore, and he is the reason that Israel is being restored to the land and redeemed and brought back to the land. It is not just happenstance that he orchestrates events, that he is making political alliances, that he is the one. And he warns Israel very specifically, and don't rely on the nations of the earth. It is me you need to look to.
Wow. Okay. And he uses Egypt as an example, which is the nations of the earth.
Right. Because Egypt was always synonymous with, of course, the power of the day. Mm-hmm. But also Egypt, Mitzrayim, was considered the world, if you will. It's synonymous with the world. And he said, do not look to Egypt, or don't look to the world. Don't look to the U.S. Don't look to the U.N. Don't look to the EU. Name your acronym. Look to me. And that's what we have today in this present war with Purim, is people are not looking yet to God. They're looking to the IDF and so on. I know there's more coming. There's a lot more coming. So Christians, you have your day to such a time as this, as we said. You get a day to be active. But a lot more is coming, but don't look to anybody else but me. That was the instruction. That was the hope that they would do that. That is the goal. That is what will ultimately happen when they have no other place to rely on. They will have to cry out to God. And that is when God will do a miraculous thing. And it's the same in our lives.
Well, speaking of returning and miraculous things, let's go back to Purim a little bit, if we could. Tell me, explain
Haman.
Explain Haman's hatred or Haman's desire to do away with them.
Right. Well, again, Haman was from King Agag, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever that term exactly means, he was a descendant, and we don't know exactly how that happened or how they survived or whom, but we do know that from Samuel, the book that the king of Israel, previous to King David, King Saul, did not kill him. He wanted to save he wanted to save the king, and he wanted to save his flocks and herds and all this stuff.
But he was told
to destroy him. And later on, generations, centuries later, we still have this person who hates Mordecai, who is a Jew, hates him with a passion, but doesn't even necessarily know he is a Jew. And the story of Esther, again, just shows how God is in back of the scenes, just orchestrating all of this CNN news, if you will, all of this, all of these political events at the UN for his purposes.
Yes.
And that's what we have, is Haman hated Mordecai because Mordecai wouldn't bow down to him.
Mm-hmm.
He was very powerful, that is Haman, very powerful in the Persian kingdom. It was a very powerful person. The story unfolds with Esther coming to the king and the king finding her very desirable, and Ahasuerus or Xerxes loved her, grew to love her more, and she stayed with him after the story, by the way.
Right.
A lot of stuff happened, but the fact is, what we have to say is, God orchestrates events. He's orchestrating the events that we're seeing nightly in Israel today. We are being bombarded by images, and we can draw our own conclusions, but they're not necessarily accurate conclusions just because we've drawn them. We have to focus on what does God say about this situation. One of the things that God says is Israel will possess, be in charge of this land, this area, and we know it's far, far larger than the borders that we call Israel today, far larger. Now, Israel doesn't want those borders. We've said that before. They can't administer them, seemingly. But God said, you will, and this war that we have going on right now with Hamas and soon to be Hezbollah, and if it's not today, it'll be tomorrow. It'll be soon, and it'll be worse. We're going to see that war also develop, and that was also told to us centuries ago, laid out who would be who would come when, what would Israel be like, and lo and behold, Jeff, that sounds very familiar to our day. just like the story of Esther sounds. Wow. All the intrigue, all the palace intrigue, all the international politics sounds like the book of Esther to me.
Wow.
And that's exactly what we see.
That's amazing. So, Neil, talk me through the idea that the lessons of Israel and the repetition that we get from the lessons of Israel and how God is saying the same thing over and over and over, right? It isn't just for Israel, is it?
No, it's not just for Israel. As the prophets have made clear many times, and the Bible's very clear, and as Jesus modeled, it is for the whole world.
How is it for the whole world?
Well, as we talked about on last show, the last show was whether it was just happenstance again that
right.
Jesus walked up in Tyre and Sidon, and it was just happenstance he saw the Gentile woman, the Canaanite woman, the non-Jewish woman, and just happenstance he healed her. It's the same thing where the prophet Isaiah said to basically Israel, it's too small of a thing. It's too small for God to only save the nation of Israel. That's too wimpy.
It's a nothing burger. But he's going to do it.
But
that's not what it's about.
Rest assured he's going to do it. That's what Mordecai
right.
said to Esther.
Because he said he will.
He said he would.
And God is faithful.
It's his name, right? That's what we have to get down. But it encompasses all of us. We're
so if,
all part of that.
If that God who's faithful to that nation, that people, right? If he's faithful to those people and he's proven it over and over and over and over again, he is the God that can be trusted.
He's the God that can be trusted. That's where we have to
land. And he's the God
that
should be trusted.
If you can't trust God's promises toward Israel, you can't at all trust him for your own promises. And we can trust him for our own promises, including salvation.
And nor should we want to trust a God that isn't trustworthy. And the Bible, the Old Testament, the Tanakh, okay, over and over and over and over again, God proves himself.
Yes, for
right?
his sake.
He proves himself for his sake over and over again. And the world, right, seeks some other way.
And that's what all gods do, that we have them, are made up gods. They're fickle.
Mm-hmm.
And God, our God, Yahweh, is not fickle. He might be mad at different times and say, I'm doing it for my sake, but he still does what he said he would do. He still says, I will redeem you, but it's not for you. So he can be mad at times.
Right.
But he still does, and so you can depend on what he said he will do. He does what he said he would do.
That's right.
And even when he's mad, he still does that. Most gods, whomever it is...
And there are other gods.
And there's plenty of other gods, yeah. But they're fickle. And they do start with whole cloth, and they do start making whole new alliances, whole new religions, whole new belief systems. But Yahweh says, nope, it's through Israel, and by extension, all of those who come into the faith of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You're in.
Wow, that's great. So it's worthwhile. It's worthwhile, ladies and gentlemen listening right now, it's worthwhile for you and I to put our faith in the God of Israel. And God created a way for us, we goyim, we notzrim, we that don't have any connection at all to it. He's given us a way by Israel, via Israel. He's given us a way by sending a Jew, right? Becoming, coming to earth as a Jew, who then opened his arms to those who were not.
That's exactly right.
To those who were not,
to come in,
right, and made a way for us to come in to the nation of Israel.
And not replace,
to be part of the nation
of
Israel. I was talking today about the famous, meaningful verses in Romans where Paul talks about that the Gentiles are the wild olive branch being grafted into the cultivated olive tree. The cultivated tree is the one that's stronger. It's the one that's got the best fruit. It's the one that's been taken care of by the gardener. It's been cultivated by the cultivator, right? Right.
Their experience, their traumatic, earth-shattering experience of having the temple destroyed was part of cultivating.
Cultivating. Exactly. Exactly. And he grafts us into that.
That's right.
So, and Jesus is the way that that happens.
He's the vine dresser, and we've pointed this out before, as Rabbi Wolicki says here. He said, it is certainty that everything that happens in history is part of the story of the redemption of Israel. No doubt. But we Notzrim, we watchers, we standers in the gap, we know from the Jewish writings that it is not just Israel.
Right.
It is Israel.
It is Israel.
It is Israel.
It is called Israel.
But we know it's Reem. It's the story of us as well. We are part of that commonwealth, as we keep saying.
We become part of the commonwealth. We are adopted as firstborns.
That's right.
And we get all the rights and all the fulfillment of the promises of the firstborn.
Right. We get all of that, but we do not replace.
It's never that. But that's it's heresy to say otherwise. And if, as we understand that, it makes me, Jeff Pelletier, very, very obligated. I feel a sense of duty to Israel. I feel a sense of covenant with them. I feel the desire to help them. I feel willing to make sure, because they're my people. I'm part of them. I'm not them. I'm part of them.
And that's exactly
what
we're seeing today. Is to wrap this up, as you were saying, to put a bow on it. It is not coincidental that the war is happening over Purim. There is a restoration. There is a fulfillment for God's purposes. It's not the way I would like to see it. May not even be the way God would like to see it, because He says, "Call on Me. Don't look to other people." Israel, like all of us humans, are still looking for other ways than God. Even if we say we're not, we are today. We are looking for things other than God Almighty, whatever that is. And Israel is, in fact, over Purim here, over the story of Esther. If you read the story of Esther, it's happening in this day that God is protecting, in spite of the dramatic losses. God is providing, and God is giving them more land, the land that He promised them, and it's happening over Purim.
And you made the point, and I think there's something to this, that the next season is the season of freedom.
Is the season of freedom, is Passover.
Passover.
Right. So there's not. It's not just coincidental. We keep going to this idea that this war, as horrible as it is happening on Purim. So it's a season of redemption. It's a season of God intervening.
Rescue.
It's a season of rescue. It's a season of salvation toward Israel.
Yep.
Do not think that salvation will not come from somewhere else if you don't do it. It will come. God is going to make sure that Israel is supreme, gets all the promises that He promised them, because He can be counted on. And it's happening today over Purim, and the next season is Passover, and it is the season of our freedom.
Stay tuned for a special Hebrew blessing at the end of every episode, including this one. This has been a great discussion. I look forward to how it continues to unfold. As you can tell, Neil and I enjoy talking about the subject, as it helps us to get to the root of the matter about God and why Israel and the Middle East are so important. Thank you for listening to this podcast, and we would love to hear from you. Visit us at our home at podbean.com. Israel, why is the Middle East important? That's podbean.com. Israel, why is the Middle East important? And you can find us any place great podcasts can be found. And you can find us on Facebook using the same title. And you can email us at whyisthemiddleeastimportant@gmail.com. That's whyisthemiddleeastimportant@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And if you like what you hear, please invite your friends to the conversation. You know, one thing Neil and I always say to each other is, I don't know. Because it is by having an opinion, yet holding it with an open hand, that we continue to grow. Shalom. See you next time.
Wait for the blessing.
Shalom.